capital of the world this morning, Atlanta, Georgia. And with the ice covered our streets and the expressways, and we don't have salt and machines to deal with it as you do here in New York, because it comes only every now and then, every 4 or 5 years, to our community. We had a terrible traffic jam, and of course I was delayed, and I had to do the next best thing, and that was to go into Newark, New Jersey. And I'm just glad to be here now. And let me thank all of you for your presence and for your patience and for your understanding. Let me begin by saying that you and I today are living in a very critical period in the history of our nation and in the life of our world. We are faced with some terrible and very difficult problems. And these problems will be solved only by you and by me. As we celebrate Black Heritage Week across our nation, and as we pause to think of the contributions made by Black people to the life and to the development of our nation, we must take a look at our responsibilities and raise the question within us, what are we going to do about these unsolved problems? One of the grave problems that confront us today on our college campuses and on the campuses of the great universities of our nation is the silence of young people, the silence of students, the non-involvement of students, which is nothing more than an extension of the apathy and the complacency which grips our nation today. I want to tell you now, as Frederick Douglass spoke many years ago, too many of us want to reap the harvest, but we don't want to plow the ground. We want the rain void of the thunder and the lightning. It is true that we may not get everything that we fight for, but whatever we get in life, we must fight for it. If there is to be change, if there is to be change in the state of New York, if there is to be change in the city of New York, if there is to be change in the South, if there is to be meaningful change in America, then once again young people and students will have to rise up and know that by getting a college degree does not guarantee that you get an education at all. For I know countless numbers of individuals with degrees, but they do not have an education. And even though I am a strong advocate in acquiring degrees, and especially your baccalaureate degree, because it is so very, very necessary in life as you move toward one of our greatest problems and a solution to it, and that is jobs and income. We need our degrees. But I must emphasize to you the fact that we need more than degrees. We have forgotten, and we need to be reminded, that it was the tramp of marching feet and moratorium after moratorium that brought to an end the godless and senseless war in Vietnam. I need not remind you that it was the marches and the demonstrations of the early 60s by young people that made it possible for us to break down the sagging walls of segregation in our hotels and motels. And today, we can live in the hotel and motels of our choice. It was the movement of students, young people, that did away with the colored water that we were forced to drink, and black people going around to the back doors having to take out a sandwich. It was the activity and the movement of young people in Selma, Alabama, and finally on a journey to Montgomery that won for us the right to vote within our nation. And because we won that right to vote, the literacy test was destroyed. It was done away with in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, and South Carolina. And now we have more than 5,000 black elected officials holding positions across our nation, all the way from mayors of cities, justices of the peace, judges of the probate courts, members of the United States Congress, and members of our state legislatures. Young people brought about this change. But today the apathy has set in. And because of this apathy, and because of this complacency, young people have lost their song. There once was a time that we could hear young people singing. I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on freedom. You could hear young people singing, before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and gone home to my Lord and be free. You could hear young people singing, we shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. But no longer do we sing that anthem of the movement. No longer do we sing those songs. We are not involved. We are waiting for the old white male chauvinistic politicians to give us our freedom on a silver platter. Well, let me remind you all now that freedom will never be saved on a silver platter, with a white man serving as a waiter and black people and poor people only furnishing the appetite. Privileged classes never give up their lofty positions without a struggle. And I call upon you, my fellow students, and I say my fellow students because I am not enrolled in your university, but I am enrolled in the University of Life. that you and I must be involved. And if our nation is to be saved, it will be saved only by young people who will go back to the streets. It will be saved only by young people who will demonstrate, and young people who will realize that liberty is greater than living in the crippling shackles of fear and ignorance. Our forefathers ran with haste through the states of New England, crying out, "Give me liberty or give me death," when there was exploitation by the mother country. And our nation was founded on the principles that all men are created equal and they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It was Thomas Jefferson who dipped his pen deep in the wells of ink and etched across the pages of history, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men, not just white men, not just brown men, not just black men, not tall men, not just believing men, not Jews, Protestants, or Gentiles, but all men are created equal." And the Constitution says, "We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure tranquility, provide for the common defense, we the people." But we have gotten secure up south in New York and down south in Atlanta and Mississippi. And we think that the country belongs to the president and to the senators, and to the congressmen. And we are doing nothing about the problems and the situations that face us. Let me tell you now that Jimmy Carter is the president of these United States of America because of the contributions made by a black man. It was George Washington Carver who discovered the value of the peanut in his humble laboratory. And after Mr. Carter discovered the value of that peanut, he taught it to Jimmy's granddaddy. And Jimmy's granddaddy passed it on down to Jimmy's father. And Jimmy's father passed it on down to Jimmy. And because of that discovery, Jimmy Carter is now in the White House. He works for us. And the hand that picked the cotton once, black hands, picked him to be the president of the United States of America. And now he has forgotten his campaign promises. You and I must remind him of the fact that he campaigned on the fact that he was going to put America back to work. When does he intend to do it? I applaud the farmers who are in Washington. I applaud their demonstrations, because I know that it's the squeaking wheel that gets the grease. And you can go around here bogged down in those soft cushion chairs if you want to. You will discover that somebody will even take the chair from you or rob the chair of the cushions. I cannot stand on Black Heritage Week or Black Heritage Month without reflecting upon the contributions made to the life and to the welfare of this nation by black men and black women. And I don't want anyone to get the impression that I'm a racist, because I happen to know that black supremacy will be worse than white supremacy. You haven't seen any supremacy until you see a black man or a black woman with some authority. And oh, we rough. We waited a long time for it, and once we get it, we exercise it like it's going out of style. So I am not an advocate of any kind of racial supremacy. I'm black. Stokely Carmichael didn't teach me that I was beautiful. I knew it. First time I remember, I was 4 years of age. On March 11th, my birthday, I climbed up on my mama's nightstand and got a good look at myself in the mirror. And I knew then that I was black, but Lord knows I'm good looking. And if you are in this auditorium this evening, you may be seated or you may be standing in the furthest most section. But if you got 20/20 vision, or if your glasses are any good and you can get a good look at me, you know that God was at his best when he made me. I don't make any apologies for my look. He didn't make me tall like you. He made me only 5'7.5", overweight now, pulling 180 pounds. He says, a little piece of leather. It's a little piece of leather, but I bet dog if it didn't well put together. God was at his best when he made me. And I believe in my worth, and I believe in my dignity. And if this college gets a better speech made from this podium or anywhere on this campus, then I'm going to make the day they're going to send back to Atlanta, Georgia to get Ralph Abernathy to make it. Don't you believe Muhammad Ali? Don't you believe Muhammad Ali? Don't you believe Muhammad Ali? I am the greatest. I believe in my worth and my dignity, and I want you to believe in yours. Even the Bible says, love thy neighbor as thyself. So if you don't love yourself, you certainly not going to go around loving your neighbor. And you got to know that you are somebody. That's why Martin Luther King Jr. would close countless numbers of speeches saying, if you can't be a pine on the top of the hill, be a scrub in the valley. Be the best little scrub by the side of a hill. Be a bush if it can't be a tree. And he went on to say, if it can't be the highway, then be a trail. If it can't be the sun, be a star. For it isn't by size, whether you win or you fail, be the best of whatever you are. What on tell us? Regardless of how meager your profession may appear to be, do your job well. We must do our jobs better than any man living, dead, or unborn. Martin Luther King, let me quote him again, said, if it falls your lot to sweep streets, then sweep streets like Beethoven wrote music. Sweet streets like Michelangelo painted pictures. Sweet streets like Plato, Aristotle, Demosthenes, and Socrates taught philosophy. Sweep streets until all the host of heaven and hell will stand still. And historians will write that there lived a great street sweeper who swept his way into eternity. Believe in yourself. Get involved in the movement. And know that you are just as good as anybody else. When I finally landed in Newark today and my guest, my host finally arrived to pick me up, and they took me out and escorted me first to this little Toyota. And then they opened the back door and said, "Get right in, doctor." I said, "Get right in." I said, "You don't know who this is, undoubtedly. Not since the buses in Montgomery. I don't ride in the back seat." And then they brought me, I thought I was at Skipsky. And then they changed cars, put me in a big long car. They just thought surely I was going to get on the back seat then. I never did ride in the back of the bus, even during the days of segregation, when those buses were segregated in Montgomery, Alabama. When I got on that bus, even though I was forced to take my body to the rear, my mind always sat on front. And one day I made a vow to my mind that it's not going to be long before my body catches up with you. Who was that that said, "Reach for the stars"? Or what is the heaven for? Believe in your somebodyness. Know that this is our country. This is our land. We must think of the contributions made by black individuals. First, don't believe any longer that lie that they still teach. The reason I know it, because I was at Old Dominion University the other day, and they asked me to stay over and do some rapping into some of the classes. And when I heard what the professor told the students, says, "Now, we're not going to continue this class because Dr. Abernathy is here now. We're going to take up with the discovery of America in 1492 by Columbus." And I didn't feel like rapping then. I had to get up at 7 o'clock that morning. And I certainly didn't feel like rapping. I felt like tapping. What did Columbus, Columbus didn't discover America in 1492? The first place Columbus didn't know the way over here. It was a black man who was a navigator on his ship, the Nina, who showed him and brought him over here. And once he got here, in the Spanish ships, he discovered that America had already been discovered by the American Indians. But it didn't get right until a white man wrote it down in black and white. Look at the contributions made by men and women. Harriet Tubman with the Underground Railroad movement. Mary McLeod Bethune. Marian Anderson. Charles Drew. Charles Drew developed blood plasma, discovered it, say countless numbers, millions and millions of lives of American soldiers on the battlefield. And then while en route to Tuskegee to attend the medical clinic, a medical convention, suffered early in the morning an automobile accident, severely losing blood, and they carried him to the nearest hospital. And that hospital in the hills of Tennessee refused to give him the blood plasma, which he discovered that it had saved the lives of millions of others, and he died simply because they would not administer to him, because he was black, that which he had discovered. It was a black man who discovered Chicago, Illinois. Was a black man who laid out the streets of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Whenever I go to Washington and try to drive and find my way around, I think he was drunk, but he was black. Marian Anderson, when denied the right to sing in Constitutional Hall, with the aid of Eleanor Roosevelt, one of the great first women of America and of the state of New York, she lifted her melodious voice under the stars, out in the open spaces in front of the Lincoln Memorial. Historians wrote, but only a voice like this comes once in a millennium. We have every reason to be proud of our nation. It was black people robbed of their culture, robbed of their background, robbed of their language, tricked on ship, and brought to this soil against their will. And upon their arrival, they found no freedom at all. They were sold from the auction blocks down the river to the highest bidder. Husbands separated from their wives, daughters from their mothers, and fathers from their sons, never to be united again in this land. But we never lost hope. For from that auction block, we could look down that dying river of segregation and slavery and envision a reunion in a land just beyond the river where the wicked would cease from troubling and the weary would be at rest. You see, in America, the black man discovered not only the Alleghenies, the Appalachians, the Rockies, and the, what's that mountain up here in New York? What? That's right. The what? The Adirondacks. That's right. That's right. Thank you, sir. But we discovered the true and everlasting God. And I'm not going to let anybody tell me that Jesus and Christianity is a white man's religion, because I got to know that God for myself, and black people got to know him. They put their trust in him, and they believed if they would fight with all their might and work with all of their resources, that in due season, God would deliver them. And before Martin Luther King died in my arms, this arm, in Memphis, Tennessee, he said to me, "Ralph, for God's sake, take my people on across this Jordan to the land of Canaan. Well, I haven't gotten there yet. But thanks be to God, we are on our way." There are just a few remaining problems. Why don't you all wake up here and get with me? You're not that cold. You're certainly not that sophisticated. You all don't know how to clap your hands. And everything ain't right, because I did my research before I got here. that in for kids. That's why I did my research on it. I may not be able to pronounce it like you want me to, but I can spell it. And I found it. It took me a hard time finding it, but I found it in the book. Couldn't hardly find it on the map, but I found it in the book. And I discovered that everything is not right right here. And everything is right in Douglas County. I discovered that everything is not right at this Douglas Community College. I've been looking and checking. Ditches, thank you, Ditches Community College. I've been checking. I've been checking on you. Number one, I don't see enough black students enrolled within the university. And number two, I do not see enough black administrators at the university. I do not see enough black professors and heads of departments at the university. And I notice ain't nobody clapping but the black students. White folk, you better get with us. The struggle today is not a struggle against black and white. We ain't got nothing against you because you white. You didn't choose your color. What did you have to do with it? Don't hold anything against us because we're black. We didn't choose ours. And what did you write? You write my speech down in shorthand? I know you ain't getting no term paper out while I'm speaking. I want you to clap on when the next moving statement I make. I want you to be in the clapping crowd. We've got to get together in this struggle. It's not a struggle between black and white. It's a struggle between the haves and the have-nots. And poor white people are just as bad off as poor black folk. The tax load is just as heavy on white middle Americans as it is on black middle Americans. The tax load. That's right. In fact, it may be worse on white Americans than on black Americans. Because black Americans do know how to cook collard greens and eat fatback and ham ops. We can make it. We can get us some chitlin. And white folk don't know how to do that. We're going to teach you, though, because you are our brother. And we're going to share that knowledge and that information with you. And we're all headed to the poorhouse. There's not a person in this building today who has any money. That little money you got ain't nothing but chicken change. You think you got a big bank account, you got great stocks and bonds. I tell you what, let God touch you and give you one of those terminal diseases and let you have to stay in the hospital about 18 months. And your wife has to quit her job to care for you. Or the man has to quit his job to care for his wife. Because there ain't no need expecting nobody else to take care of you. I'm going to tell you right now, the church ain't going to do it. We will come once. Then we will come the second time. And the third time, we will hang around to find out from the doctor or from somebody in charge, when is the brother going to die? No need expecting the church to take care of you. when you got to put a second mortgage on your home and you got to get rid of that second car, then see me 2 years from now and tell me what your bank account is. There's not a person in here who can get sick and afford to go to the hospital and stay for any length of time. Don't tell me. I know out of experience. Last summer, I had to go to the hospital. I stayed 10 days. Finally, I have a doctor, a strange doctor. Strange like me, work all kinds of hours, all night long. And then he came in about 5 o'clock in the morning. Nurses hadn't paid me any attention while I was there, those 10 days, very much. So, when the doctor came in that morning about 5 o'clock, he says, Reverend Abernathy, you can go today? He says, yes, you can go. You can go today. I've checked all your tests, and they are fine. The x-rays are good. Your pressure is excellent, marvelous. Nothing's wrong. I don't find anything wrong whatsoever that a little rest will not cure. And I won't, but I'm going to let you go since you have to go all over the country telling Pharaoh to let God's people go. I'm going down and sign your make-go slip. So I said, thank you, doctor. So I got up and took me a shower, got myself together. I got one good suit. I done didn't wear it. I wasn't going to wear it up here in all this snow. But I got one. Don't you worry about it. I got one. And I put that suit on. I got everything together except I couldn't get the thing off my hand, off my wrist. And then I went on down, and I got to the nurse's station right opposite the elevators. I said, good morning. And they reluctantly, slowly looked up and said, good morning. Reverend Abernathy, where are you going? Where are you going? Don't you get on that elevator. We got to get the wheelchair. I said, what, you got to get the wheelchair to carry you downstairs? I said, darling, I do not have a wheelchair at home. I don't need no wheelchair. I can walk. You got to get the wheelchair. And I pushed the button, and the Lord had the elevator right there. And I said, you know, I've been in jail 44 times. I'm a professional protester. I stepped on the elevator, and so the young lady come running on the elevator, and she grabbed me by the arm. Oh, Dr. Abernathy, holding my arm so tight in somewhere between the fifth and the sixth floor. Only she and I on the elevator just holding me so tight. I said, what you doing holding me so tight? And then I looked at her, and she's real good looking, you know. And I said, that's all right, you can hold me. Then I went on down to the cashier, and the cashier said, oh, yes, Dr. Abernathy, sure, come right in. I have your make-o slip right here. Let's, let me go over to the calculator. And she went over to the calculator. And then she came back, and she said, now you may go. You may go. Just give me a check for that. And I looked at it 10 days, and all I saw was $4,800. And I said, where the wheelchair? Where the wheelchair? And I made them carry me back upstairs in a wheelchair. And I got in the bed and stayed until they sent for my doctor. And the doctor came and said, Dr. Abernathy, I said, what's wrong with you? And I said, well, I blacked out. He said, oh, well, you know you didn't black out. I said, you know you don't have any pressure. Well, you know you didn't black out. I said, well, if I didn't black out, I whited out. I said, all I saw was 4,800, and I couldn't see nothing else. You can't afford to go to the hospital today. Why don't we have a national health insurance plan for our country? The next thing that is so desperately needed in our country are jobs and income. President Carter said he was going to put America back to work. I believe it, Mr. Carter. He's a nice man. Students asked me, not the students, the administrator brought me up here and said, and yes, you know President Carter. You know him very well and have known him for quite a while, haven't you? I said, yes, I've known him for quite a while. I thought I knew him. I don't know whether I know him now or not. He is the most refreshing and the most rewarding president we've had in the White House within modern times. He's a marvelous improvement over Richard Milhouse Nixon and over Gerald Ford. But he still has not done enough. He has not done enough. He's not kept his campaign promises. Goes to church on Sunday. I believe sincerely that he's a been born again Christian, and I'm a Christian minister. And you know that. I'm impressed with that. But when I was a boy growing up in the black belt of Alabama, the church was not built like this theater. The church had a center section. And an aisle on each side, just as you have here. But over here, where my interpreter is seated, they had some seats that, benches that ran horizontal. And over here, you had some benches that ran horizontal also. The deacon sat over here, and that was the amen corner. And the mothers and the deaconesses sat over there. And that was, they were to do their thing. And back here was the choir. And the preacher was right here. And the people was out there. And everybody had to do their thing. Whenever the preacher got up to preach, the deacon said, amen, Lord, help him. Come on up, brother. And the sisters, they'd help him out. Help get him in a high gear. Wouldn't do like you all. Push him on. They always moan the moan. They start moaning. Well, I never did like those moans because I couldn't hear what the preacher had to say. But finally, we called a preacher, and Reverend Eaton didn't have anything to say. So I would listen to my grandmother. She would always moan two moans. And I'd listen to those moans, and I'd hear them very, very clearly. Her first moan was, Lord, help him to preach your word. She was hungry for the word of God. And she wanted him not to preach his word, but God's word. And then the second moan was, if you got good religion, then you ought to show some sign. And whenever I think about President Jimmy Carter, and I see him embracing the vice premier of North China, and I see him concerned about the crisis in the Middle East, and I hear him talking about human rights in Southern and South Africa, and in Brazil, and in Chile, and South America, I can but hear the words of my grandmother saying, if you got good religion, don't just go to church on Sunday. Don't teach a Sunday school class with the press sitting nearby. But show some sign. And the sign that we want you to show is to create jobs in the private and the public sector of our country and to pass through the Congress of the United States not a watered down but a meaningful Huffer Hawkins bill that would put all Americans back to work.